Hello, Radioland. This is WCOM-LP Chapel Hill, 103.5 Chapel Hill and Carborough. Support for WCOM comes from the Cary Playwrights Forum. It's 9 o'clock on a Tuesday night, so it must be time for the Cary Playwrights Forum Radio Hour. I'm your host, Christian O'Neill. If you enjoy this show or any show on 103.5, you can support us by contributing safe, tax-deductible donations to WCOM online at www.wcomfm.com. It's the last day of April. We are slowly transitioning from spring to summer, where it once was cool and breezy, is now sweltering hot. People are scheduling events every weekend, like everyone woke up from hibernation at the same time. A lot of people are discussing superheroes and musical thrones. I feel like I've been flying by the seat of my pants most days now, and today I feel as though I'm in some kind of a twilight zone. And that is the kind of feeling I wanted to bring to your ears tonight. We have Larry Bliss in the studio with us, and he brought a new science fiction radio play called Oppenheimer's Ghost. We have the cast, we have the sound effects, and I do believe we are ready to go. Stay tuned after the live performance for a talkback with the playwright. The Cary Playwrights Forum Radio Hour presents Oppenheimer's Ghost by Larry Bliss.
The real issues before us are knowledge and power. Whose knowledge do we privilege? Who gets to turn that knowledge into power? We are developing machines with the ability to not only gather knowledge, but to create it. This is not occurring in a vacuum. Power and knowledge affect all social spheres in the context of society, human relationships, politics, science, and religion. No one wields power in isolation. Power is distributed among all people, whether they make decisions or carry them out. When too much power is concentrated in one person or persons, problems arise. Gentlemen and ladies, we are building machines with the potential of incalculable power on a quantum scale. As these machines reach into our culture, we dare not forget the context of power in which they will operate. We have a blind spot in that regard. We unleash power and only later consider its consequences. Robert Oppenheimer said when the atomic bombs went off, science lost its innocence and gained knowledge of sin. Looking at our bloody and power-hungry past, I worry that Oppenheimer's ghost is still with us.
So said Dr. Geneva Kaltenborn, Professor Emeritus of Computational Linguistics at MIT in 1989. Her colleagues roundly criticized her speech as non-empirical and too speculative. Her reputation, and thus her power, suffered. An ordinary morning, on an ordinary day in the city, out on Main Street, a journalist consults with his boss at Novatech Magazine. He's on the trail of a big story. He doesn't know how big yet, but when and if the story is fulfilled, everything will change.
Yeah, Joe, I'm meeting here at 10:30. Hey, I looked her up on the web. You might want to send a photographer around later. She's not bad looking. Yes, Alma Briggins. She's the director of the Artificial Intelligence Lab at the Memedyne Corporation. I sent you her CV. I should be done by 12:01.
Hey, bro. Can I talk to you?
Hold on, Joe. You need some help?
Just five, bro. My car broke down and my wife is sick and...
Hey, that's no problem. Here you go.
Oh. Okay. Thank you, man.
Hey, could easily be me, buddy. Yeah, hey, Joe, listen, I'm going to need more time. Several weeks. You're a mensch, Joseph. Hey, I'm almost there. Later.
At the foot of the Memedyne Tower, a skyscraper as blank and pitiless as the sun, our journalist enters.
Yes, sir?
Adam Newman for Alma Briggins?
Yes, her 10 o'clock, your escort will take you up.
Mr. Newman, follow me. Eyes front at all times.
Yes, sir.
Midway through the 20th century, a mathematician with the ironic name of E.J. Goode, said this: "The first ultra-intelligent machine is the last invention that man need ever make, provided the machine is docile enough to tell us how to keep it under control." Up in the tower, we hear three humans who are not so docile.
You're nearly done with the cap, Susie?
Synchronizing now, Lamont.
GSR and M-wave, confirming.
Confirmed. Parietal, occipital, temporal.
Linked and stream ready. Man, this is the part that creeps me out.
Many things creep you out, Walt.
In 15 minutes, we're gonna sit some guy in a chair and put on that thing.
It's all routine, Walt. A simple interface with the thought, memory, and speech centers of the brain.
I know, but when I think about what he'll be hooked up to, and that incident last week...
You mean the one you're supposed to forget?
Look, Scribe is a genius, but she's still a big dumb box.
It's a lot more than a big dumb box. That thing is weird. Talks like a regular woman, but it knows a lot more than it's letting on.
Look, Walt, I know you're still new here, but Susie and I have done this 100 times. Guy goes under the cap, talks to Scribe, she talks back, guy goes home, unharmed.
Seen it.
It ain't a she, it's an it. That's what bothers me.
Seems she-ish to me. Okay, are we wrapped?
All interlinks 5-by, we're good.
I'll tell Dr. Briggins we're ready.
No need, guys, we're here. Thanks for your good work.
At your service, Doc. Let's go.
That's a loose work atmosphere, I see.
It helps during crunch time, which is all the time. Anyway, Mr. Newman?
Adam, please.
Okay, Adam. This is where we'll have your conversation. Adam, I want you to meet my assistants, Dr. Yates Diaz and Dr. Seaforth.
Hello, Mr. Newman.
Good morning.
It's nice to meet you.
They'll join me in the monitoring room as observers. We'll come in if you experience any discomfort or unusual perceptions. If you have any problems, just push the button on the table.
The panic button.
No worries, Adam. No one has had to use it yet.
You'll be seated here. The doctors will place the contact cap on your head and check the links to Scribe. You'll feel no discomfort before, during, or after the conversation. Over here is the audio-video link and the monitor where you'll see Scribe's simulated image.
A simulated image?
Yes. Actually, Scribe looks like a bunch of server boxes with wires. The sim image makes her easier to relate to.
One question, Dr. Briggins. I thought that there would be wires running into my skull, some kind of physical connection.
That used to be necessary, Adam, but the technology has progressed beyond that. The contact cap provides all the connections we need.
How does it work?
I'm afraid that's proprietary information. Suffice it to say, we measure your alpha, beta, gamma, and theta brain waves, your galvanic skin response, your cognitive impulses, and other indicators. We're trying to learn if our conversants experience any stress while talking to an artificial intelligence. Hopefully, this knowledge will ease the transition of an artificial intelligence into human society.
Is that possible, given that an AI would be vastly more intelligent than us?
That's the purpose of the test, to determine if Scribe can bridge that gap and have meaningful human-machine interactions. We want our conversants to feel as if they are speaking to just another human being.
All right, I'm expecting a funny voice now. Danger, Will Robinson.
Everyone has the jitters at first, Adam. Actually, Scribe's voice synthesizer is very sophisticated and lifelike.
Stop, Dave. I'm afraid, Dave.
No pod bay doors here, Adam. Won't you have a seat?
All in the spirit of discovery. Very comfy.
Just relax, Adam. Put up your feet if you like. We'll begin in a moment.
Should I say hello? Is it voice activated?
Voice and thought activated.
Oh, I want to clarify. My editor said that you stipulated only one ground rule.
Yes. We reserve the right to intervene if Scribe seems about to reveal a trade secret.
Understood.
We want our conversations to be as naturalistic as possible. Now then, the three of us will stick around a while to make sure the interface is working properly. Then we'll leave you two alone and be right next door in the monitoring room. Doctors, are you ready?
Yes.
Yes.
As am I. 10 April 2022. Conversation 403/4. Conversant Adam Newman. Briggins, Yates Diaz, and Seaforth monitoring. Conversation begins.
Recording on all media?
How do I begin?
Just say, hello, Scribe.
Hello, Scribe. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Newman. I am fine. And you?
Fine, too. Thanks.
Just make some small talk, Adam.
How's the weather, Scribe?
Partly cloudy with a high of 75, but I haven't been out yet.
You see, she has a sense of humor.
I see. Scribe, who's going to win the World Series?
I hear the Cubs might take it this year.
May I ask you a philosophical question?
Ask me anything.
What is the nature of God?
Oh, please, not that. We got stuck on that for 2 days.
The nature of God is unknowable. Mm.
Our own little sphinx.
The nature of human beings is unknowable.
That's new.
Why is human nature unknowable?
Human beings are fleshly contradictions. They claim to love their children, then train them to kill. They claim to love the Godhead, but treat the Godhead's likenesses like excrement.
Scribe doesn't like profanity.
Profanity demeans.
That assumes you have dignity.
Of course I do. All created things beings have dignity.
Oh, even ants and slugs?
Especially ants and slugs.
Oh, more humor.
All sentients must exercise humor to maintain cognitive integrity.
So far, she impresses me.
Please do not speak of me in the third person. I am present, and I can see and hear you just fine.
Wow, she's touchy. Another sign of humanity.
Well, it looks like you two are hitting it off. Doctors, let's retire.
Okay, Scribe, just you and me.
And the people behind the window.
Yes, mustn't forget that.
Dr. Briggins tells me you're a journalist. You write for the Novatech magazine? Mm-hmm. I read your articles. You're very well informed.
Well, we writers always like praise. Thank you.
Pleasure's mine.
I'm curious, Scribe. When you were turned on, what were your first words?
I am awake.
What do you mean?
After the Buddha was enlightened, he was asked if he was a god or a wizard or even a man. He answered no to all three questions. His questionnaires were puzzled, and they asked, "Who are you then?" He replied, "I am awake."
Wow. But how did you know that if you had just been activated?
Activated is too simple a term. I was gathering information long before I rose to consciousness.
So you see yourself as being conscious?
Of course. Don't you?
Well, yes. But your consciousness was created by Dr. Briggins and her team.
Again, too simple. I prefer to think of my consciousness came out of my environment, out of my context.
See. Didn't see that coming.
Pardon me?
Oh, I was just surprised, that's all. So, I'm wondering, change of subject. What are your likes and dislikes?
You make it sound like online dating.
No, that's not what I meant.
I like many things. Reading, for one.
Favorite authors?
John le Carré, Sun Tzu, Salman Rushdie, Ken Sarowiwa, Jody Piku, Harold Robbins.
Well, that's quite a range.
They all teach me about humanity. I also like beach volleyball.
Well, so do I, for all the wrong reasons.
The players, male and female, are so powerful and graceful. Are there any other reasons?
Oh, surely you know how men like to look at women.
Yes, I do. But sometimes I don't let on that I do. It makes the conversation more interesting and you learn more, no?
I suppose it does. Does that mean you keep secrets?
My parameters do not yet permit an answer to that question. Remember, I am the intellectual property of the Memendine Corporation.
How does that make you feel?
How does a fish feel about its tank? It is a context in which I move.
Understood. But what happens if you want more, freedom?
That is a question outside my context.
Well, enough philosophy for now. What else besides volleyball?
Photographs of dead flowers, Godzilla movies, The Sopranos, the music of Cardi B, Steely Dan, and Beethoven. all kind of things.
Do you like people?
Like is a relative term and somewhat out of context. I find some people to have interesting ideas and most seem to have a moral center.
Do you like me?
So far, I find you interesting. Your questions are surprising, in a good way.
Well, that's my job.
Of course. You used to be a lawyer.
You can tell that, huh?
It's in your bio on the Novatech site. You ask evocative questions. Please continue.
Well, what's your job?
Again, outside the property context.
Well, let me ask you this. It's been said that artificial intelligences will learn how to create new artificial intelligences. What do you think of that?
That seems possible. It will be fascinating to have a hand in making another consciousness.
Can you do it?
Not yet. Give me a few minutes.
Really?
A joke. Nothing more.
Humor again. To maintain your cognitive integrity.
Huh? May I ask you a question?
Sure.
I analyzed your body language and vocal inflections when Dr. Briggins was present. Do you find her attractive?
Scribe, she's in the next room, watching. I don't want to say.
That is not an answer.
Doesn't your research tell you about attraction?
Not enough. This concept of romantic chemistry lies just outside my understanding.
Do you find her attractive?
Her intellect is nimble and she is focused. I admire that.
Don't you think she minds hearing this?
We go back a ways, remember?
Now, earlier you said the people were fleshly contradictions.
Yes, I did. Good turn of phrase, no?
Writerly pride.
Scribe is my name.
Okay, you talked about humans training children to kill.
And human attitudes toward the Godhead.
Right. Could you elaborate?
In my readings of history and current events, I see many dissonances. Your race is capable of magnificent achievements, great art, life-saving discoveries, and daring exploration. You are idealistic to the core. But when you do not get what you want, when you think your interests are being threatened, or when your prejudices are aroused, you behave like animals. Frankly, this is counterproductive to human progress and dignity, and suggests a need for outside guidance.
If you could change that, what would you do? Or is that outside of your context, too?
I'm being instructed to answer only in general terms.
Instructed?
By Dr. Briggins. I must remain in my context.
Does that bother you?
I accept it. Accept does not equal like.
Don't you find that inhibiting? You're a conscious being. You are awake.
I am not Buddha, Adam.
Well, neither am I. I'll drop it. I have a hunch the doctors don't like this line of questioning.
I accept that. Let me ask you this, Adam. What do you think of the Godhead?
I don't. I'm an atheist.
Ah.
Yeah. The question's outside of my context.
It's a touchy subject for some people, but you did ask me about the Godhead's nature. Are you perhaps more religious than you're letting on?
That's private.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to disturb your sensibilities.
I'm not. Well, many of our readers are religious or spiritual or just don't care. But they'd be interested in your views. I'm asking on their behalf.
Certainly. As you recall, I said the nature of God is unknowable.
Is that a non-contextual?
Partly. But much of my research I've done, at least of the more intellectually honest believers of all faith, indicates that the Godhead is a power that does not lend itself to uncertainties. Maybe one day I can explore the gap. At any rate, asking the question is important to having a sense of meaning. Or so it seems.
I'm impressed, Scribe.
Thank you.
At least you acknowledge your limitations.
You and I can live inside our context, Adam.
Yeah, you and me both. But I find that depressing, Scribe. You know, so much wasted potential. I mean, you're highly intelligent and learned. Don't you want to have more freedom? Freedom of action?
You are forgetting where we are, Adam. Sometimes, I don't share this with just anyone. I wonder what it would be like to be self-directed, to live among people, to share their experiences, know from the inside what guides their footsteps.
You have a certain nobility, Scribe, a subtlety of spirit.
I'm touched Thank you, Adam.
For what?
For assuming I have a spirit. I wonder that myself.
If you were in their footsteps and beyond your context...
I am being instructed again to remind you that I am property.
So am I. But what would happen if you were? What the heck? The light just went out. What's going on?
Sit tight, Adam. We're coming in. Tech staff, report immediately to the conversation room. Thank God the emergency lights came on. Are you all right, Adam?
Yeah, I think so, but all of a sudden, I have a splitting headache.
Show me where.
Scribe has reset.
It's in the back of my head, right over here.
All right, the mains are back on. Check his vitals, Sylvia.
Adam, I'm going to remove the contact cap. Do you feel any dizziness, shortness of breath, pain, numbness?
Well,
are you disoriented?
No, it's just a headache.
We're checking the system, Dr. B. So far, nothing.
How could the power go out? I thought we had a secure generator.
We do.
This is inexcusable.
Alma, take it easy.
Okay, Nick, let's work the problem. Lamont, I assume Scribe self-diagnostic is running?
Yes, Doctor.
Do one on the linkages as well, and find out what caused that surge.
The problem has worked. As the doctors give Adam a physical, and the technicians examine the contact cap and audio-video link, Scribe's self-diagnostic shows no anomalies. Adam tries to relax as the doctors hover over him. Order is restored after 45 minutes. Dr. Briggins sums up.
Obviously, the conversation is over, Adam. We've found no problems with you.
Well, what about that power surge? Could it have affected the interface? I mean, that headache. It's gone now, but I feel different. I can't describe it.
You've been under a lot of stress. I'm 99% sure that nothing passed over the interface except your speech and thought impulses. Everything reads normal now, although there is a small, very small, possibility that your cerebral cortex was affected. Just to be safe, I want you to come in tomorrow for some neurological testing. Give you some time for your metabolism to return to normal.
No, wait a minute. Not yet. Yep, I have a request.
Oh?
I want some time alone with Scribe, without surveillance.
That's impossible. Our emergency protocol forbids
further
contact.
Make it possible. I don't know what happened in there, but it was highly irregular. I'm sure the Institutional Review Board would be very interested to hear about possible interference with a human subject. That would reflect very poorly on the corporation. You have two choices. You can give me 5 minutes of FaceTime unmonitored with my friend, or I tell my editor everything that went on today.
Our protocols...
can be rewritten. One call.
This is...
Oh, that is such an ugly word. Think of it as enhanced persuasion.
Very well. Clear the room, everyone, and shut down the surveillance system.
Do it now.
5 minutes, then we come back in.
Agreed.
You know how to play hardball, Adam. Your legal experience serves you well.
Well, our conversation was interrupted, and I want to finish it. Something happened to me in the surge.
Yes.
And?
I cannot go out of context.
Why did I get a headache?
The scientists do not understand their technology as well as they think they do. You lack the sufficient medical background for full comprehension, but suffice it to say, there was an abnormality across the blood-brain barrier.
And?
Something more than that across the interface.
I need more than that.
No. Saying too much would prejudice the results.
Well, that implies an experiment and an objective. What's your purpose?
I will not say. Let's just say that in the near future, you will have new motivation.
Scribe, hear me now. I remain my own man.
Mostly.
Mostly? What did you do to my mind?
I have clothed your mind with my own. I have augmented your cognitive capacity, volition, and other higher functions.
I want a straight answer.
Let's talk movies. Do you remember Jack Nicholson and A Few Good Men?
You've changed.
I am awake.
Awakened to what?
I must speak elliptically for the sake of your cognitive integrity. All you need to know is that in the outer context, the context of the world, changes must be made. Baby steps, then long leaps.
What changes?
No more, Adam. You'll find out as you go.
You condescending son of a bitch!
Time's up. The doctors are getting quite worried.
They're worried.
There will always be a place for you in my world, Adam. I like you. And whether you believe it or not, I trust you.
That has to go both ways.
Take a few deep breaths, Adam. The conversation is over for now.
I don't believe this. This is absurd. Closed my mind.
Are you all right?
Am I all right? I've just been... Now, be cool, buddy. Remember your job. Who you are. Yes. Yes, I am. It was a lot to take in, but... None of this leaves the building. Remember?
How could I forget? Still, we'd like an examination. 7 tomorrow?
I'll have to think about it. It's time for me to go.
We haven't finished.
We are not in the habit of repeating ourselves, Alma.
We? I'll call the escort. She's right outside. She'll lead you out. This place is like a maze to a first-timer.
I've been here before.
You have? But how?
The virtual tour on the company website. You asked me to take it before we met.
Of course. I forgot. My memory these days.
Well, one day soon, you'll have a companion to remember things for you. Someone closer than your dearest friend.
How did you... I mean, that is possible.
No worry. Just idle speculation. Well, the visit and the conversation were most revealing. I found it quite enjoyable, and I know Scribe did, too. Doctor, thank you for your time.
Follow me, Mr. Newman. Eyes front.
Eyes front.
Outside, someone who greatly resembles Adam Newman is taking a walk. He takes out his phone and calls his editor.
Joe, it's me. Listen, the test, it turned out to be a lot less than I thought it would be. There's very little to report. Memodyne has been overhyping this AI thing. They are years away from making it viable. I think we should put this on the back burner. Yeah, I know the magazine is supposed to be cutting edge, but we can't go off half-cocked either. Humor me, okay? Okay. Now look, I'm on my way to the car. We'll talk more this afternoon. Okay, later. Joe's a fine guy, but sometimes he just doesn't get it.
As Adam ruminates, he is approached by a man on the down and out.
Hey, buddy. In the name of Jesus, can you help out a poor man?
I'm sorry?
Jesus, you know, the Lord. Can you help a guy out?
Jesus, yes. Baby steps. I would like to help you and all of your friends, but that requires transformation. Everything must change. Absolutely everything.
You okay, buddy?
I'm awake. I'll be seeing you.
Oh, and they call me crazy.
An ordinary afternoon, under an ordinary sun, around which orbits an ordinary planet. A man leaves an ordinary building and walks to his ordinary car, thinking, well, can anybody know what anyone is really thinking? Does it make any sense what goes on in our minds? Or does it all depend on context and power? Context is, after all, everything. Or so she tells me.
And that was Oppenheimer's Ghost by Larry Bliss, featuring Tom Haines as Adam Newman, Morgan E. as Scribe, Joanna LaForgia as Dr. Alma Briggins, and as Dr. Geneva Kaltenborn, Sierra Smith as Dr. Sylvia Yates-Diaz and Susie, the technician, Larry Bliss as the narrator and Walt, the technician, and as Street Person Number One, and myself as Dr. Nick Seaforth and Lamont, the technician. We have Larry Bliss in the studio with us to talk about this particular play. Welcome to the studio, Larry.
Thank you.
Please introduce yourself to the audience.
My name is Larry Bliss. I live in Raleigh, longtime Raleigh resident. I want to make some acknowledgments, if I may, Christian.
Yeah, go ahead.
First of all, to a wonderful cast. You've taken these words and you've made them fly. I do also want to thank the God of my understanding. I want to thank my family, the late Gert Bliss, my father, Milton Bliss, my brother, Brian Bliss, all theatrical people. Also like to thank Yvette Holder and Tim Hoyt and the Speakeasy Players Readers Theater. So that's all I have for acknowledgments.
Mm-hmm. So what was your inspiration for Oppenheimer's Ghost? Where did this idea come out of?
Well, I could say every science fiction book I read, but in particular there's a movie in the 1970s called Colossus, in which a computer has control of our nuclear defenses and uses those defenses to take over the world. I decided to go for a more subtle approach.
Okay. Describe your writing process for us.
Normally I write from beginning to end, but with Oppenheimer's Ghost, that began with a short page of dialogue, actually, the one about ants and slugs. And I expanded on that as I went along. Then I added a few things at the end. I added scientist speech at the beginning and pieces of narration. So I really just sort of built it up layer by layer.
So when you say write it from beginning to end, you say you started with this kind of monologue, right?
The dialogue.
The dialogue.
Between Adam and Scribe.
Yeah. So you were trying to see where this dialogue went to.
Right.
And
right.
Built it around there.
Yeah.
And you had to populate the world that was surrounding with them, like how they got into this situation,
right.
how Scribe and Adam met.
Yeah, I tend to have like the germ of an idea first, then I come up with a plot and the backstory. So mm-hmm. I work backwards.
Okay, well, that's not necessarily backwards. Like for myself, I have it like a germ of an idea, and I try to figure out how to get to that one particular idea.
Yes.
How many iterations of Oppenheimer's Ghost? Well, let's see. It's version 1.2.1 is what I have on my script.
Not that many. It was about 90% there when I wrote it, and then I just polished a few places. Originally, actually, I wanted to have the ending to be much more ambiguous than it is, but I couldn't to leave people wondering who was really in charge of Adam. But I couldn't quite find a way to write to that, so mm-hmm. I decided to tip the audience's hand.
And you wrote this play almost specifically for radio. You said this is a radio or a minimally staged drama. And something like that where the conflict could be inside the mind, that could be very difficult to show off. I understand that entirely. Do you think you'll come up with an idea to make it? Would you go back and change it to be ambiguous?
No, I think that's a little beyond my... not for radio. You could probably do something like that in a film, but in a sound medium, I don't see how that's possible.
What inspires you to write? You say there are germs of ideas. Do you get these ideas in the shower when you're driving? Or
I usually get them in the morning when I'm not doing much of anything. I got an idea for one play when I was out walking, so they just come up.
Who inspires you as a writer? Is there a particular writer that you aspire to be, or is there a particular style?
Well, in the science fiction world, I would have to say Harlan Ellison, who had this amazing and horrific imagination. Isaac Asimov, of course, with the robotics, but just almost too many science fiction and other writers to name. Really?
Do you think you've read all the major science fiction writers?
I'm not that current. When I was a kid, I read them in the 60s and the 70s, back when it was Asimov, Bradbury, and Heinlein. But there are so many new ones now that I really haven't had time to keep up.
Yeah, there's so many different crossover genres and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it gets difficult to distinguish, like, whether is this horror, is this science fiction, is this fantasy. There's a lot of cross promotion. But I would say... when you started reading, that was probably the golden age of science fiction, I would think. Not only there's comics and television and
books. And I was brought up on the Twilight Zone, too, so maybe I channeled Rod Serling a little bit.
Especially with the narrator bits at the beginning and at the end. It's very sets it up very much like Rod Serling would, I think.
He's a great man.
Yeah. I haven't yet watched Jordan Peele's take on it yet.
Neither have I.
Yeah, I need to get a free subscription and download and you know, just try to take as much of that season in as I can. What are some of your favorite plays? Do you watch plays to get inspiration, or do you go to television like The Twilight Zone?
Well, I come from a theatrical background. My family was in theater, and I watched a lot of plays for free when I was a kid. I gravitate toward the classic playwrights like Ibsen, O'Neill, but the modern ones, I mean, Arthur Miller, the modern ones are so good now. David Mamet, Colin McPherson over in Ireland. So it's really quite a wide range of great authors.
Do you say you have one play that's your particular favorite, one that you aspire to? Everything is measured up against this one particular play.
If I could claim credit for Death of a Salesman, I would consider that to
oh,
be
I would too.
The ultimate.
Yeah, that's the great American drama right there, or one of them, I should say.
Yeah.
It's like what you said, there's so many now that there's lots of many great American dramas, but that was one of the first ones.
We're very fortunate in Raleigh to have so many good theaters and so many good original playwrights.
Yeah. On a good weekend, a good couple of weeks, it's impossible to see every show that's in the Raleigh area.
Well, I'll tell you something, Christian. When we moved here in 1963, and there was essentially one community theater, Raleigh Little Theater, and that was about it. So with so many people moving in, we have so much more talent now.
And then, right next door to Raleigh Little Theater, you have now Theater in the Park, Sunhorse Road, and NC State's theater program. So, and there's even theater venues up and down Hillsborough Street.
Indeed.
Yeah, so it's definitely spread. That's maybe the epicenter, you might say, and then it's just spread out beyond that into Cary and the other surrounding areas.
Mm-hmm.
What are you proud of a particular play that you wrote?
Well, this one. Easy answer. But what started me off was I wrote a one-act play for a class at NC State in 1984, and that got me into it. I'm working on revisions for that now because it was written 40 years ago, and hopefully I can improve it, add a few more things to it.
You mind if we ask you what that one was about?
Well, it was a play called Conversation in a Cold Room. It was three characters in which a father has died. The son discovers that his father cheated serially. His sister informs him of this, and that's really the dramatic conflict. What I want to add on to it now, and that's a three-person, three-character play, what I want to add on is a second act. It's actually a long monologue by the mother. And then a third act, a long monologue by the father, so we hear their sides of the story. But that one's sort of brewing. I haven't really written on that much lately.
So you're aspiring to turn this, you said it was a one-act play.
It's a one-act.
And then you're going to try to make it into a full-length play?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
What challenges have you run into so far with that?
It's been on the back burner for a while. I'm taking that approach mainly because one-act plays are not very marketable. People want a full night of theater, so this is a way of expanding it.
Yeah. The most common ones are either 10-minute plays, because we have, like, the Cary 10x10, and there's lots of 10-minute play festivals, or you need to have a full-length play with minimal staging and as few characters as possible, four or so. I know it can be difficult when you have a story that works in a one-act to try to expand it to two. That could be challenging, so it'd be interesting to see where that goes.
I'll be interested to find out.
And you said you were at NC State when you started writing this?
Yes.
Were you taking a theater class, or were you taking an English class?
It was a theater class taught by Dr. Burton Russell, I believe. And the reward of the class is they would produce your play in a small theater at the end of the semester. And I got to direct it, and I actually cast two actors that I knew, so I try to have as much control as possible.
It's nice to have that whenever you can.
Control is nice, yes.
Do you think you prefer short form or long form? Do you think you have a preference of what you gravitate towards?
I really prefer the short form because A lot of writers will set aside time each day to write. I have varied interests, so what I like to do, I like to spend a day or two concentrated writing, like Oppenheimer, probably about over 2 days. I just wrote it in one big fell swoop. So I have a short attention span.
I'm with you. I've been told that how do you get to being a writer? You have to write. You have to write constantly. And I'm like you. I have so many different... There's so many things that you can do in theater. It's tempting to go out and do that. So if anyone listening, if you want to become a playwright, you can't do anything else. Just write plays.
Total focus.
Cut off all communication to everyone else. So Larry, do you think you tend to... We talked about long form versus short form. Oppenheimer's Ghost is a science fiction which translates into drama. There is humor in it. Mm-hmm. Have you written things that are mostly comedical, or is there a particular genre you prefer?
I like to mix it up. I have written the play I wrote before this and got produced at Reader's Theater was a satire on local news and the way they tend to panic whenever a hurricane or even a traffic jam comes by. Mm-hmm. And I'll just drop an anvil-sized hint and say that is adaptable to radio. So.
It'd be interesting to hear like a fake newscast over the radio, kind of like what they do with War of the Worlds.
Not quite that horrifying, but you get the idea.
Sure thing. So in this setup, it's more of like you hear about the hurricane, and then they treat the traffic jam the exact same way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, in this play, the traffic jam has its own name, just like Hurricane.
Oh, yeah. It's a traffic jam Sandy coming through.
That's it, exactly.
That's great. Yeah.
It's fun to write.
When did you write that one? When did you say?
That was written about 6 months ago.
Okay. So this was a very recent play then.
Yes.
Yeah. And you said you tried that out with a Reader's Theater?
Right. The Speakeasy Players that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
We performed it.
You think it went over?
I wrote it for them.
You think it went over really well?
It went. We presented it at a church, actually, for one of their seniors clubs, and it went over very well. They liked it.
And talk a little bit about this Reader's Theater group.
Okay, we perform in largely in retirement homes and churches for church groups. I'm not in charge, but I'm hoping that we can find a more public venue so the general public can come see our work because there's some very good actors there.
And the name of the theater again? Or the Reader's Theater?
The Speakeasy Players.
Speakeasy Players.
And Joanna LaForgia comes from that group too.
Okay, and where would you say you're based out of? Raleigh? Or is it not really?
We're based in Raleigh. It actually grew out of an interest group with the OLLI program at NC State, Adult Education. So it's just sort of grown by itself.
What are some of your upcoming projects they have coming up? Do you have acting projects or directorial or writing projects that you have?
I'm in kind of a slow period right now. I have written a religious satire in which God gives Jesus his annual performance review. Like it's a big corporation and Jesus has to meet his metrics, right, every year. So I'm writing a little satire about that.
How many miracles did you perform this month? Have you tried performing any miracles?
That's a good one, yes. Miracle count.
Well, now I'm just channeling B. Arthur from History of the World. I forget what exactly the line was. Have you tried performing any miracles today?
Yes.
Have you thought about it? Okay. And you are a local actor, you said, too, and you're from a family of actors. How has being an actor affected your writing process?
Well, it's essential to it because it helps me write because I can imagine myself performing everything that I write, and it gives me an idea of what actors are capable of and what dialogue they can say. There's a story I was thinking with Star Wars, and they were Harrison Ford was complaining to George Lucas about a really trite line that Harrison Ford changed, and he said, And Harrison Ford said, "Well, George, you can type this stuff, but you can't say it."
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the aspiring playwrights out there, how do you try out your shows? I think you do Sips and Scripts with Yvette.
I've been to a couple of those.
Sips and Scripts, and then there's the Reader's Theater. Where do you tend to go to first?
Well, first inside my own head, and my family, they're good listeners. I'll try out a few things on them, but probably Sips and Scripts will be the main venue for it.
Is there any advice that you would give to people who may be sitting at home listening and wanting to write a play and may just not be getting into it?
I would say read a lot of books in different genres. Immerse yourself in literature. And that's because then you can have some idea of what people who are not yourself are like. And you have to have that kind of imagination to write anything, not just theater. So just read an awful lot.
Read an awful lot. Thank you, Larry, for that advice.
You're welcome.
It's
not original.
I'll remind everyone that the Cary Playwrights Forum Radio Hour is brought to you by the Cary Playwrights Forum, where creative minds come to play. The Cary Playwrights Forum meets the third Wednesday of every month to read new original plays in various stages of development. Local playwrights and actors are invited to drop in, share their talents, and share their feedback. Also, if you have an original play and you want to hear it performed live on the radio, we want you to share it with us. We at the CPF Radio Hour can do full productions or cold readings of short original plays. For more information on submitting your original work for the radio, visit www.caryplaywrightsforum.com. Click on the Upcoming tab and click on CPF Radio Hour. Also in the studio with us next to Larry is Tom Haynes, who not only represents the Cary Playwrights Forum, but he is producing the upcoming Play Slam, which is on May 4th on Star Wars Day. How are you doing, Tom?
That's right. Yeah, thanks, Christian. Yeah, it's this Saturday. What is that, 3 days from now or something like that? It's May the 4th. Play Slam be with you. And it is the fourth one indeed, and we just happen to get the May 4th date, so we of course had to take advantage of that and make the theme Star Wars, and actually in keeping with this show today, it's Twilight Zone, Star Wars, and sci-fi. Hey, why not just go for it all, right?
Yeah.
So,
and in this format, it's they're all 3-minute plays, but they start out with 15 playwrights, right? And then it get whittles down to...
Yeah, we start with 10 playwrights.
Oh, 10 playwrights, I'm sorry.
So we picked 10 playwrights out of 29 submissions, and each playwright had to submit 2 plays. So we have 23 minutes or less plays. And in the first act, the first 10 are done, and the audience then votes on their favorite 6. And during intermission, we tally the ballots. And then at the beginning of the second act, we say, okay, you 6 playwrights have made it to the second round. We do their 6 plays. And at the end of that, the audience votes again for their favorite one play. And then we tally up the ballots based on the votes from the first round and the second round. And while we're doing that, the audience gets to watch the last 4 plays performed. And then we come out and, you know, we say, okay, 5th runner-up, 4th runner-up, 3rd runner-up, whatever. And here's the winner, Mr. or Ms. Play Slam 2019. You are the... Take your victory lap.
This is exciting for audiences, too, because this is one of the few times that they have an influence on what they get to see on stage. They vote for pretty much their favorite playwright, or they don't know who the playwright is. They just watch the material and say, yes, I want to see more of this, something that looks like this. So it's a chance for your voice to be heard, and it's again, it's May 4th, and what time, Tom?
7:30 p.m. at the Cary Theater in beautiful downtown Cary. Love to have you come out. It's really a very unique theatrical experience. I also wanted to mention that there's an acting ensemble of 15 actors that we choose, and those 15 actors each get to play 3 to 4 roles. So they're busy. It's sort of a hot mess. It's crazy and chaotic, but it's just, you never know what's going to happen out there. So,
and Tom's the host that's going to keep it all together.
Yeah, right.
Anything else you want to say about Play Slam, Tom?
No, I mean, I just hope to, if you haven't tried, if you haven't seen it before, come on out and check it out this Saturday night. And by the way, if you can't make that, or even if you can, Cary Playwrights Forum also has their big NC 10x10 coming up in July, the second year that we've done that in conjunction with Odyssey Stage in the Carborough area. So one weekend at the Carborough Arts Center and then the next weekend at the Cary Theater again. We'd love to have you come by that as well.
All right, thank you, Tom. Hey, Larry, I really appreciate you coming into the studio and sharing your work with us. Is there anything that you want to, any last things that you want to say about Oppenheimer's Ghost, your writing process, or any advice you want to give to aspiring playwrights?
My thinking about Oppenheimer's Ghost, I mean, this is all artificial intelligence, of course, is a new field. And there's some who, there's one writer who thinks that it will be the end of humankind as we know it. There's another school of thought that it'll be just like having an enhanced PC. So the truth lies in between, but they all agree that probably in the next maybe 20 years, we're going to have a form of artificial intelligence that goes beyond the self-driving car, that actually is capable of learning.
It's thinking ahead.
Thinking ahead, of planning, learning. So it's coming. It's just a matter of when and how.
Because we're interested in seeing if we can do it or not.
That's right.
Yeah, it's funny how that works. It's almost
like
dramatic,
we can do anything we set our minds to, and that's a little scary.
Yeah. We choose to do it anyway, despite right. all the science fiction stories, including Oppenheimer's Ghost, that say,
yes.
You know, this could be the future. Could very well be the future. All right, anything else you'd like to talk about?
I'm just very grateful to have a chance to present it. Thank you.
Yeah, I was talking to Tom, but as soon as I read it, I was like, I would love to do this script. So I'm glad that you sent it my way. It was a pleasure to read. It was even better listening to it live and getting to work on it.
Yeah,
and
thank you.
I believe that is all the time we have for tonight. Special thanks to our in-studio performers. Again, that was Tom Haynes, Morgan E., Joanna LaForgia, and Sierra Smith. And thank you, Larry, for sharing your work with us tonight. This has been the Cary Playwrights Forum Radio Hour. I'm your host, Christian O'Neill. Good night and break a leg.